south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
So, how about it? Have you been hacked lately? Have you had your dad's credit card numbers, bank info, or your ID stolen lately? Or maybe someone's hijacked or cloned your web domain? Or your credit cards. Well, if it hasn't happened to you yet, it's not a matter of if, but when. In fact, it's so unsurprising and such old news. When news of such hacks show up on websites, people just roll their eyes and move on to the next article. In fact, just today, first story that pops up on the news, and bound to fade away in an hour or two, is a story that says the details of 10.6 million guests who stayed at the MGM Grand Hotel and MGM Resorts have been hacked. They've had their names, home addresses, social security numbers, phone numbers, emails, credit card, passport information, etc., posted on one of those darknet hacking forums. And law enforcement officials are expecting tens of thousands of ID thefts to come out of that hack. Why? Because hackers and tech delinquents know people who frequent MGM Resorts and the MGM Grand Hotel have dough. They're generally considered upper middle class or better, therefore worth hacking and f***ing with. So, the question is, have you been hacked lately? Experts say, you know, on a long enough timeline, you're looking at a 99% probability. So, who's responsible for all that mischief? Who's doing it? Well, when it happens, most people have no idea. Oh, I know, it's the Russians, right? But there is the odd occasion when you've been hacked or your website cloned, whatever, when you do know exactly who did it. For example, take this particular lady that I fired just a few months ago. Turns out, over the years, she's been embezzling, stealing thousands, and hijacking my seminar lawyer's PayPal account. And she wasn't even a Latina, she was a gringa. Oh, and she was good, too. As the evidence mounted, we found out she'd been stealing deposits from gringos and expats who'd use her as a tour guide, even hitting gullible gringos and expats up for short-term loans that she never had any intention of paying back, figuring they'd go back to the States and that was the end of that. And then she tried hitting up gringos and expats living down here, and she'd disappear when they tried to collect. But you see, you don't hijack a PayPal account of a lawyer. When PayPal was contacted, they said she committed fraud. The lawyer filed charges against her. When she found out the Guatemalan government was going to block her passport, not allowing her to leave until she faced the music in court. So she skipped the country and went back to the States before they could block her passport. So now she's into fake news and spamming, trying to get back at people for losing her gravy train. So then you might ask, why would we hire a person like that in the first place? Didn't my lawyer and I see the signs? Well, it was because of a recommendation. Turns out her dad, known as John Galt, who came down to one of my very first seminars and ended up living in Guatemala, he practically begged us to hire her, saying she had great computer skills. Though he did say, confidentially, she needed a fresh start because she'd just gotten fired from Hewlett-Packard up in the States. Now, why didn't we see that coming? Well, her dad pestered and pestered. He vouched for her, and everyone liked him. He was a great guy. Though he did admit he barely knew his daughter, who he had little contact with over the years. Now, he knew she had some problems, and asked me and the lawyer to cut her some slack. For one thing, she was a single mother without a job. Not to mention, the father of her only kid died from a heroin overdose. Or was it speedballs or crack? I can't remember. So, that's what we were dealing with. Man, all the signals were there, but we were just too stupid to see it, I guess. And her dad, though admitting she was slovenly and short in the personal hygiene department, like everyone else, she had her faults, but she really needed a break. And because we liked him so much, and at the time were in dire need of a new webmaster, we gave her that job. It just proves the old adage, you should never hire anyone who's had a bad history just because a family member recommended her. Same thing goes for hiring your own relatives. It almost never turns out well. So anyway, she's left a trail of gringos and expats whose deposits she'd stolen, and a trail of frustrated gringos and expats who were nice enough to give her a loan. And that's why, you might remember, a few months ago I made the announcement on this show that I no longer recommend anyone contracting the services of one Jennifer Byrd, B-Y-R-D, a.k.a. Jen Galt, formerly of the Expat Concierge Service and John Galt Tours. So anyway, I and my seminar lawyer expect the spam, website clones, fake news, etc. will keep on coming. You know what they say. You're nobody unless you've got haters out there. Tell you what, the more haters, the more your ratings get pumped up. Yeah, well, that's today's world, man. No matter, when you get hacked, you just move forward, set up a new website. You probably know my new website by now, expatplanb.com. Oh, and another fact of life. No publicity is bad publicity, man. Isn't that the truth? Funny thing, in the last few months since all this has gone down, my listenership has exploded. It's gone through the roof. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw out a little clarification for you. Oh, and speaking of gringos getting ripped off by gringos who you've helped out and who you thought were your friends, you know, that no good deed goes unpunished thing. For that matter, it doesn't have to be gringos or gringas ripping you off or scamming you. It could very well be Latinos or Latinas. In fact, I've got a brand new Expat Eddie story for you that touches on that very subject. So here goes. I know you longtime listeners have heard many stories about Expat Eddie. He's a very good friend of mine who, like me, came down many years ago knowing not a lick of Spanish. But in his case, he came down some years after I'd landed. He had someone's couch to crash on. That'd be mine. Now, to fill you new listeners in on part of the Expat Eddie story, he was one of those guys who came down to Latin America to start absolutely fresh. He came from a bit of a trailer court, white trash background in Texas. Very smart guy, but when you're born into that kind of situation, sometimes you find yourself in the thick of it. Anyway, he started a couple of small businesses, went bankrupt, had his credit ruined, got involved with a few loan sharks, filed bankruptcy, made a few enemies, and had to, well, get the hell out. And his mom gave him $5,000, and that's what he had in his pocket when he landed on my couch some 20 years ago now. And, you know, a couple months after he landed, he was hanging around in Salvador, the capital, San Salvador, to be precise, and he realized they didn't have a single decent sushi joint in the whole country. Of course, you have to ask yourself, how does a guy with a white trash trailer court background develop a discriminating taste for sushi? Search me. Who knows what lurks in the hearts of men, white trash or otherwise. And, you know, he doesn't mind if I call him white trash. In fact, down here in Latin America, he likes to bring it up once in a while. Not just to show how far he's come up in the world, just as kind of a test to see if Latinos know what he's talking about, and most of them have no idea. Now, white trash in Spanish is basura blanca, and it's absolutely a fact that 99.9% of Latinos have no idea what you're talking about when you say basura blanca. And Eddie says that's because middle-class Latino style is sort of the Latino version of basura blanca. All you have to do to realize that is have a drive through the average middle-class Latino neighborhood. I'm talking about middle class as described by Latinos. That said, naturally, he says he feels right at home. So anyway, just a few short years after Eddie landed on my couch, he placed a dozen or so little one-man or one-woman sushi kiosks in various shopping malls throughout El Salvador. A few years after that, he expanded into full-size restaurants. He successfully franchised them. And a couple of years later, sold everything except one or two of his favorites. And now Expat Eddie lives the life of Riley, a man of leisure. But his life is not without its traumas. Sure, he's got a beautiful house in a gated, guarded community just on the outskirts in the burbs of San Salvador, the capital of El Salvador. He likes it all right, but there's trouble in paradise. He's been living there for the past 5 or 6 years with his beautiful runway model girlfriend, Claudia, who, by the way, just turned 30 years old. Now, of course, most people know that once models hit 30, the career kind of stalls. It's downhill from there, and she knows that. Her biological clock's ticking, too, and she's been pestering Eddie for a kid. Things had been moving along okay in their relationship. They're engaged now, and she's been in the wedding planning stage for at least a year. And Eddie, like every other guy, wants nothing to do with the planning. He says what we all say, when the day comes, just straighten my tie, point me in the right direction, give me a shove, and let's just hope the booze doesn't run out at the reception. But here's the latest wrinkle in that plan. Eddie, being no dummy, got a vasectomy before he ever came down. Why? Because he's heard the stories from a lot of gringos and expats. A Latina with a gringo kid? In some ways, it's like winning the lottery, for her, that is. Rumor has it, we're generally pretty responsible and we'll do the right thing. In contrast to most Latino guys who knock up their girlfriends. Well, I don't have to tell you how that usually turns out, except for the fact that in any given Latino neighborhood, young single mothers with no man around always seem to outnumber mothers who are living with or who are married to the father. Sound familiar? But as bad as that sounds, the saving grace here in Latin America is that almost all single mothers have a nice support system. They're living in the house with their mothers, fathers, grandparents, or other close relatives. And there's the fact that almost all young single mothers here in Latin America work for a living because they can get out of the house and go to work while other family members automatically take care of the kids. So you don't have this generation upon generation of single mothers just eating bonbons and watching the retired Asians. Because here, the government doesn't give you a check for sitting at home and doing nothing, only if you're sitting in a government job doing nothing. Turns out the social safety net here in Latin America is the extended family. And that's one of the reasons why it's always been said that when you marry a girl here in Latin America or a guy, you're also married to the family. And when at first us gringos and expats hear that stated, you won't know how true that really is until it happens to you. And if that family's dysfunctional, man, look out. Hey, I know what you're thinking. Every family's dysfunctional in one way or another, and I'll agree with that. The fact is, there's a huge sliding scale of dysfunctionality. In other words, some families have a few quirks you can deal with, and other families, man, if you marry into one of those, you're forever That is, unless you take the love of your life and you move far, far away from the extended family. Nope, I'm not suggesting you bring him or her back to the States. That's the kiss of death, too. You longtime listeners have heard me expound on that subject in a couple of past shows, so we won't revisit that subject right now. Suffice it to say, unlike when you hook up with someone seriously up in the States, and you know, for example, his or her family is dysfunctional, even to an excessively toxic degree, it's a problem, but it can be resolved. You just have very minimal contact with them, or lay down some strict rules. Let's face it, every family's got a black sheep or two. You kind of expect that. Meanwhile, down here in Latin America, it can sometimes be your fate that the person you fall in love with has a family consisting of a flock of black sheep. Good example, Claudia's family. Those folks soon to be expat Eddie's in-laws. Now, over the years, expat Eddie has told me a few stories about Claudia's family, beginning with how her stepfather has hit him up for dough more than a couple of times. Couple hundred here, couple hundred there. Of course, expat Eddie never pushed or mentioned it again. He looked at it as a gift. That is, until one day, Claudia's stepfather phoned up Eddie and said he'd like to buy him breakfast at the local Greasy Spoon. Of course, Eddie knew he'd end up paying for it, but he went. In fact, up to then, Eddie never had a bad feeling about the guy. He worked, he provided for the family, all right. Though Claudia eventually admitted he had another family in a distant town. It was a secret for a long, long time. But that's not so uncommon here in Latin America. So anyway, at the restaurant, Claudia's stepfather whipped out $300 and said, Eddie, I want to pay back the money I owe you. Eddie was so surprised he took it, shoved it in his pocket, thinking, wow, I never expected that. And even though that $300 only made a small dent in what the guy really owed him, Eddie thought, at least the guy's trying. That is, until the real reason for the sudden breakfast came up. Turns out, the guy said the family was in a bit of trouble. That his wife, Claudia's mother, and Eddie's soon-to-be mother-in-law, Suegra, had gone to the neighborhood loan sharks months and months ago and had skipped out on the payments. And the night before, knocked on the door, flashed a gun, and said, you got 48 hours to come up with $5,000. So that was it, and Eddie ended up paying for the breakfast, too. Now, luckily, Eddie and Claudia live at least an hour to an hour and a half's drive away from her parents' house. But as Eddie points out, it still ain't far enough, because her dysfunctional family members keep poking their nose into Eddie's life. Recent case in point, Claudia's 30th birthday. So, Eddie booked an all-inclusive luxury package at the Hard Rock Hotel in Panama City. Now, at the house, Eddie's got a dog, a bird, and a maintenance guy slash gardener who comes every day, and a live-in cleaning lady. You know, practically every house here in Latin America that's worth more than $50,000 has a maid's quarters. And as for Eddie having a live-in maid, it is very convenient because he and Claudia do travel on occasion, and the live-in cleaning lady is good security, and she feeds the dog and the bird, etc. However, with this little birthday trip to the Hard Rock Hotel, Claudia, knowing that the cleaning lady was overdue on vacation time, and was pestering to get at least a week of it pretty soon. Well, Claudia arranged for the cleaning lady to have her week off, making a deal for her mother to house sit for that week. So she made the deal and told Eddie, who was not all that thrilled about it. Though he agreed under certain circumstances, one being she can't let anybody else in the house. And number two, she had to stay in the house or on the grounds. She couldn't take off for a day or two to the city and leave the pets in the house unattended. So they went to the Hard Rock Hotel and had a great time. And when they came back, everything was A-OK, and Eddie's maintenance guy gave Claudia's mother a ride back to her homestead an hour and a half's drive away. You know, Eddie's house is upscale, and he's got lots of cameras posted everywhere. So does everyone else in the neighborhood. And Eddie's got the main unit and the recording head locked up in a closet. And like everyone else with a high-end surveillance system, he can view the cameras individually on his smartphone. And while on vacation at the Hard Rock, he checked the cameras occasionally, and everything was on the up and up. Then, as usual, when Eddie gets back from a trip, he goes in the closet and checks out the hard drive. And since all his cameras are set up to continuously run and record for something like 2 weeks straight, he's got a big hard drive. There's also a running timeline for motion detection. In other words, you look at the monitor, I've seen it. It shows you an overlap timeline on each camera. When the line's in green, there was no motion. And when it's in yellow, that means there was some movement recorded in front of the camera. Now remember, Claudia's mother was the only person in the house for that week. And Eddie noticed right away. It was one particular day for about an hour where multiple cameras showed there was motion in front of them at the same time, which would be impossible if there was only one person in the house. At most, there would be two because there's a person and a dog. And the bird, well, it's in a huge cage, slightly out of the camera view, so it never triggers the motion sensors in the camera. So then Eddie pulled up the footage to see what was going on. Sure enough, there was another person in the house. In fact, two people. But his stepfather and her half-sister, who she hadn't talked to in at least a year and a half. Not since she saw a Facebook posting of her half-sister wearing some expensive earrings and a necklace that Claudia thought she had lost. Proof, she swiped them from Claudia. And back then, when she was confronted, she denied it. There was a big family feud and they haven't been talking since. So Eddie watched that particular hour of footage and saw his future mother-in-law, sister-in-law, and father-in-law go through his and Claudia's drawers and closets and swipe things like booze, clothes, tools, Claudia's makeup, and jewelry. Now Eddie says they didn't make a big haul of it. Claudia's a model, so she's got tons of clothes and shoes and jewelry. She's got so much stuff she wouldn't miss half of it. And Eddie's booze cabinet, that was stocked to the gills. A couple of Johnny Walker Black Labels gone missing wouldn't even show up on the radar. So anyway, he called Claudia over. They sat and watched the whole thing. She phoned up her mother. Her mother denied having anyone in the house. The odd thing is, she knew about the cameras, but she didn't know about all of them. Eddie had a couple of cameras right out in the open, but most of them were those new pinpoint jobs. Some of them nicely hidden and camouflaged. And Eddie said, to tell you the truth, he didn't mind that the stepfather came over. I mean, that was his wife, house-sitting, after all. He couldn't be mad about that, but the obvious thievery. And that is why Eddie has put the brakes on the wedding. Meanwhile, Claudia is one of those rare Latina birds who hasn't had a kid or two yet at the ripe old age of 30. So, as you might imagine, they had a huge fight. Hell, they had plenty to fight about. Not the least of which being he did not want to marry into a family of liars and thieves. He didn't want to move hundreds of kilometers just to get away from that family and start from ground zero, that is, finding a place in a good upscale neighborhood with good access for shopping, with conveniences like a nearby airport and such. He did not want to pick up and move just because her family was contaminated. Then, Eddie said, Claudia dropped a bombshell. She said, it doesn't matter if we're married legally, since we've been together so many years, she said. That means technically we're married by common law. Because you see, in El Salvador, as well as most Latin American countries, just the act of living together after a certain amount of time constitutes a common law marriage. Meaning, of course, she'd be entitled to half of everything they had accumulated while they were together. All right, just a little clarification on that. In Latin America, most of the marital laws state that if you get divorced, it's 50-50, but only property and things you've accumulated while you were married. Anything the people had before the marriage, like cars, land, or sex toys, remains 100% the property of the original owner. So that's where their relationship stands right now. They're in the middle of a huge fight, a disaster in the making, initiated completely by her dysfunctional family. So there's a little reality check and a heads up from expat Eddie. Once again, reinforcing the fact that when you get married to a Latino or Latina, for better or for worse, you're stuck with the family too. And if that family happens to be highly dysfunctional, the problems will be never-ending. And don't think it's like having dysfunctional relatives up in the States who you can just easily avoid or tell to just f*** off. Down here, it's not like that. If you're married to someone with toxic, dysfunctional relatives, you'll always be the go-to guy when they screw up. Unless, of course, you're separated by a couple of hundred kilometers, or better yet, an entire country. Anyway, stay tuned. We'll be doing some updates on Eddie's situation as the reports come in. Enough said about that. Now I'd like to talk about a very interesting new perspective on that so-called war on drugs that was lost a long time ago. And this one's coming from an investigative journalist named Katrina Garcia Reyes. It's from an article that just came out from a website publication called Investigación Periodista in Chile. And here's the English translation. It says, between October 2014 and January 2015, Katrina Garcia Reyes interviewed 33 Mexican men who worked in the Mexican drug trade. She did this to try to understand how their experiences relate to their own involvement in drug trafficking from an actual street dealer's point of view, trying to relate how their personal experience and families relate to their involvement as drug traffickers. And of these 33 men she interviewed, some were street drug dealers, some were hitmen, and some were narco bodyguards. And she found, interestingly enough, they all shared similar life stories, no matter what position they had in the narco hierarchy. Turns out, of these 33 Mexican cartel members, 61% of the people she interviewed were dealers, 27% were hitmen, 6% were human traffickers, 3% were narco bodyguards, and 3% were narco drivers and mules. So you might ask, why am I bringing this up? And what makes what she found so interesting and so underreported? Well, here's what she says. There's a recurrent theme that keeps coming up in these interviews. It's the anger that all these men felt against their fathers, most of whom were domestic abusers and wife beaters. Turns out, in fact, she said 28 out of the 33 men she interviewed admitted that at some point in their lives, their greatest aspiration had been to kill their own fathers. So 85% of all the men she interviewed said their greatest aspiration had been to kill their fathers. And those are the ones that admitted it to her. And surely most of the other 15% had their family hatreds too, but just didn't want to talk about it. So for these 28 guys that actually admitted, they all said their biggest frustration in life had been watching their fathers beat on their mothers continuously. And all they wanted as kids, adolescents, and young adults was revenge, not for themselves, but for their poor mothers. She said she found with most of these guys, the fantasy of someday making their own fathers suffer was their main motivation to work in the drug trade. Here's a quote from a guy named Roro, who explains, my only thought was to kill my father when I grew up. I wanted to cut him into little pieces. And being a successful narco would give me that power. Then there's a quote from another narco named Ponciano. He said he'd think of his father when he was torturing his victims and says, quote, I made them suffer even more for that, like my father made me and my mother suffer. Then the article goes on to say that narcos have a toxic masculinity that not only goes unpunished, but gets rewarded by having expensive guns, great liquor, jewelry, cars, and women. Though, too, they all understand the downside is that they have a very short lifespan, so they enjoy their excesses while they can. These are, she says, common themes driving the men that are committing these unprecedented levels of violence in Mexico. Worse yet, the article goes on to say, the media has made hit TV shows and movies about narcos, and musicians write popular songs about them, too. In fact, in the world of narcos, you're no one until some musician's written a ballad about you. And now, a whole generation of poor adolescents see narcos as Robin Hood-type heroes they want to emulate. Adolescent kids don't need school or education to join, and to them, school is a waste of time. Teachers and classes are boring and slow, etc., etc. That means whatever you've heard in the media about so-called reform and education and more billions thrown at the narco problem, there's really no chance of it getting better. There is no short-term solution when you see young people thinking that being a tough, ruthless, toxic male narco is a glamorous life. It's glamorous on TV anyway, but it is short. In fact, being a narco or connected to a narco is more popular than ever. Just get a load of this article. It explains just how popular narco culture is, and how acceptable, too. It starts out, the wife of El Chapo has launched a new fashion brand in the U.S. bearing his name, making the latest attempt by families of drug kingpins to cash in on the public fascination for the likes of El Chapo and Pablo Escobar of Colombia. It says, El Chapo's wife's new line of fashion items named El Chapo Guzman. What else? We'll begin with a line of hats, clothes, and jackets, and it looks to be a multi-million dollar business. Then it says, in mid-February of last year, just before he was sentenced to life imprisonment, El Chapo signed away his image rights to his wife, along with, get this, his U.S. and Mexican lawyers, Jeffrey Lichtman, Edward Balazero, and William Purpura, who are also now involved in setting up the fashion brand. It also says, last February, Chapo's daughter, Alejandra Guzman, announced a launch in Mexico of her new brand based on her narco daddy's popularity called El Chapo 701. Then it says, the fascination for narco culture in Mexico, compounded by numerous films and TV shows about the exploits of kingpins, has made retail branding of drug lord items big business and almost inevitable. And though there is some outcry from the public and government, concrete action is not forthcoming. There's a similar thing happening in music. Music called Narco Corridos, the new and growing industry of songs honoring and praising drug lords. And get this, talk about sickening. It says one of the places these Narco Corridos songs are most profitable is in Los Angeles. I wonder how that happened. Makes you all hot for open borders, huh? At first, it was thought El Chapo's clothing label would fail in the United States by virtue of the Son of Sam law, which is designed to prevent criminals from capitalizing on their crimes. But El Chapo's attorneys have found a loophole, having him sign away his image rights to his wife and daughter. Bottom line, if your plan B involves moving to Mexico, because you're thinking maybe things aren't so good there, but they're going to get better. Well, I got a cure for Montezuma's revenge. I'll sell you cheap. All right, we're close to the end of the show now. Just want to remind you once again about my brand new Latin American healthcare report. Over 100 pages, exactly what you need to know about doctors, hospitals, clinics, healthcare insurance for gringos and expats, and the latest and greatest news about stem cell clinics here in Latin America. To pick up your report, just go to expatplanb.com. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.